me no conversate with the fake. That part. All my bitches independent bitches. That part. I just want the paper. That part. All my bitches flavor. That part, that part, that part, that part. Hey. That part. Bang this shit in the hood one time, little bitch, I'm back and popping. Tell that ugly bitch to move away, I need more options. Broke them, fix your pockets. All I do is profit. Quarter million switching lanes.
Hello and welcome to the Thunderous Transmissions podcast. I'm your host, Sean Woods. Before we get into too much this week, I want to go ahead and throw this in at the beginning. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_Woods15. Thanks to everyone who's answered, threw in some Twitter questions. You can also email me Sean_Woods15@hotmail.com. I think I'm one of three remaining people with a Hotmail address, so go ahead and send those that way. Leave a 5-star rating over there on iTunes and a review. That's very helpful. Follow the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcasting Network. All of that stuff. Do that. Greatly appreciated. Joining me this week is a guy who's well known for his writing as well as his sort of his knowledge and his salary cap. He is a contributor at Real GM as well as today's Fast Break. He's an alum like I am. It's Keith Smith. Keith, thanks for joining me this week, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always happy to come on and, you know, talk basketball with you.
Not a problem. Okay, so, you know, normally when I bring people on, I like to think of myself as sort of someone who knows a little bit about the salary cap. I don't know a whole ton, but I it's interesting to me. And I just want to know, as far as you, when you got started, what made you focus more on the salary cap end of things, maybe more than the, you know, general day-to-day NBA stuff?
So it's actually kind of a funny story. What ended up happening for me with the cap was actually about 10, 12 years ago, I was prepping for a fantasy basketball draft, and I couldn't find good depth charts anywhere. So I started making my own depth charts. From there, I got a little like, I wonder how much cap space these teams had. That really expanded the summer that everything was happening with LeBron James and Chris Bosh, and could they go to the Heat? And I really didn't understand, how could they go to the Heat? How are they going to have enough cap space? And I knew that generally you can exceed the salary cap, but I didn't understand cap holds. So I started Googling things and looking things up. And actually at that point I said, you know what, I want a copy of the CBA. So I sent away to the Players Association, had to pay for it, and got a bound copy of the CBA sent to me. And then I read that thing back and forth, understand it, and then I found, which I wish I had known before I sent away for the CBA, the CBA FAQ line that Larry Kuhn put together. So, you know, Larry's document can answer just about anything plain English versus a lot of legalese that you want to know about the cap. So I got involved with that, really started, and then it just took off from there, and I really built out my database, which I share about every 2-3 days on Twitter. I'll usually tweet out the link to my NBA set that go up, and a lot of people get into those and check those out, and there's a wealth of information around the cap and rosters and all that stuff in there. So take a look at that if you want to know, but that's kind of how I got into the cap, and that's how I get started.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Larry Kuhn's frequently asked questions is something that I definitely check out. If not on a daily basis, at least every other day, because everything you need to know, not everything you need to know, but everything that you need to know specifically is on, that frequently asked questions, because everything else that you're going to see in the CBA is sort of nuanced, and, you know, there are definitely things that if you really need to know to the detail that is necessary, you can go check it out. But there's like 130 frequently asked questions on that website, and it's fantastic. Everything that Larry Kuhn put there is awesome. Okay, so specifically when it comes to, like, you know, just the general public and some casual fans and maybe even some more dedicated fans, what's the one or two things you think that confuses them about the salary cap?
I think the single biggest thing is the concept of cap hold. I think people struggle to understand that you can't just sign anyone, because even if you have cap space, you know, this summer is a great example. You had a lot of people saying everyone has cap space, you know, and that was true for a lot of teams, but not for everyone. And teams, excuse me, make moves to generate that cap space. So with the concept of a cap hold, basically how I explain it in really simple terms is it's a placeholder sap to have a team not be able to completely exceed the cap and go crazy. So what it does is it locks them into an amount and says, even though, let's use Dwayne Wade and the Heat as an example this summer, even though Wade and Whiteside were agents, what you didn't want to have was a situation where the Heat could just spend as much money on both wanted. So it locked them into an amount for both of them that says if they want to get paid and pay him as much as they want to pay him, they have to retain his cap hold and thus retain his free agent. And I may be getting a little too deep into it, but this is an important thing. A lot of people will say, I looked and they only have guys under contract. You know, how do they not have cap space? Right? So that's how it works, because each player has an associated cap hold. Now, if you waive the cap hold or renounce, is the term the NBA actually, if you renounce those, that money comes, fake money, that hold, placeholder money, off your books, and that frees up real space under your cap that you can then use. So that's what you see a lot. So that's probably the number one thing. And then my little pet peeve, just being a cap nerd, is when it gets reported that a player has a team option, but it's really a non-guaranteed contract. And that just is my pet peeve, personally. And they kind of, for your average NBA, amount to the same thing. But if you want to get a little deeper into it, a team option means the guy's a pending, and something has to happen for him to be under contract or not under. A non-guaranteed contract means he has him under contract. And as it pertains to, you know, Thunder fans, and for you all, the Magic used, at the time, Ersan Ilyasova's non-guaranteed contract that sent Oladipo that way and brought back Serge Ibaka to Orlando. And what happened is, if that was a team option, he wouldn't have been eligible to be traded because they would have had to pick up and exercise that team option before they go. Boston's been rumored to use those things with the big contracts, Seki Amir Johnson and Jonas Derebko. Those were both non-guaranteed, but carried a combined 17 salary that they could have used in a trade, where if they were true team options, you can't use them in a trade. Because once a team option's picked up, in 99% of cases, it makes the contract then fully guaranteed. So,
right.
Probably my two big things, and those are the two things that tripped me up the most when I was getting started. And then I find myself explaining a lot on Twitter and through email.
Right. They and, you know, in both instances, the Thunder have actually used those specifically with. Yeah, Deion Waiters, they extended the qualifying offer and then actually rescinded the qualifying offer, but still held his cap hold, which means that, you know, the reason, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason that teams normally, you know, want to keep that cap hold on their books is because then they can exceed the salary cap to pay, you know, if they have early bird or bird rights. And with, you know, so the Thunder did that with Deion Waiters. They did... you know, pull the qualifying offer so that he could sign for whatever amount of money and whatever amount of years with any other team up to his max, obviously. But the Thunder still held his cap hold so that, you know, if they decided at the last moment that they wanted to throw some money at him, they could. Now, obviously, he signed with the Heat and they can no longer do that. So, but that's what it was at the time. And with the non-guaranteed contract, Anthony Morrow became fully guaranteed, I believe, on July 15th. So the Thunder could have moved him. They could have, you know, waived him and I think only paid him about $1 million of that non-guaranteed contract. But as it is, he's set to make, I think, about 3.4 this year. And, you know, it, as far as the Thunder are concerned, yeah, they're probably not going to use that money in any, you know, any greater capacity. So that's probably about as good as they're going to do, you know, a knockdown shooter who really doesn't do anything else on the floor. But for $3.4 million, especially in this new era of, you know, everybody, Timothy Mozgov making however much money he's making, it, you know, you're not going to do much better for that. So quickly, just a couple last questions generally on the salary cap. The NBA went through a lockout in 2011 and missed, I think there were 66 games played. They missed up until Christmas. And I think the opt-out date, and that's the Players Association and the owners, is either December 1st or December 31st. I don't remember which. You can correct me there, but after you correct me, I want you to answer just a yes or no. Do you think there will be a lockout?
So yes or no, that I up until today, or yesterday rather, I believe that there would be a lockout. I didn't think we were going to end up missing any games. I thought in order for both sides to accomplish ultimately what they wanted to do, the best way to do that times two lockout. So I thought we would see a lockout but cost no games. As of last night, the conversation, and there's a link to it on Real GM. It's been reported a bunch of different places. But Michelle Roberts came out and said she's optimistic that they're going to be able to reach an agreement, which is because you often hear that from Adam Silver in the league, that they're optimistic, and the Players Association will be more of the side that holds things up. But with her coming out and saying that, so now I'm more on the fence, we won't see a lockout. And you were pretty close with the date. I think it's actually December 15th.
Okay.
Is, you know, one side or the other has to opt out of it. So we'll see. You know, we've got 4.5 months for them to keep talking and get it figured out. Even if there is a lockout, I don't think we'll miss any game. It'll be anything that'll impact any of our watching of the season after this coming season.
Right, and you kind of pointed out the difference there. There can still be a lockout, and the NBA cannot miss any games so long as they come to an agreement. Probably just by the time training camps come together or the very end of the summer. The first game of the NBA season's normally, you know, the week of Halloween, right around there. So as long as they have a few weeks to get into training camp and get everything together, there probably will not be a lockout. So let's say that one side does decide to opt out. Are there any major CBA changes, either on the Players Association or owner side, that you sort of see coming, you know, in the summer of 2017?
The first thing is always money, right? That's what this is all about. So it'll always come down to that. Each side always wants a little bit of a slice of the pie. So I think you'll see something done there. One thing that's definitely going to be addressed is the rookie scale contracts. They've become almost ridiculously bargain deals, the money we see thrown around right now. So they're definitely going to address that to bring the rookie scale up, at least a touch, probably to closer to what we're seeing, you know, in the average salary range. Same thing with exceptions. The room exception this year's, you know, $2.9 million roughly, and that almost, you know, half the teams are still sitting with that room exception available because they didn't need it because they could more than that in cap space. So I think you're going to see those types of things addressed. On the ownership side, I think they're going to push more for some D-League reform. We're hearing more and more about that. Adam's very open that he wants a full 30-team D-League where every franchise has their own D-League team and can utilize it better. So I think you might see some changes with that. One of the things I would love to is them expand rosters up to 20, but five guys are associated to the D-League instead of, you know, counting against your active NBA roster. And there's, you know, maybe if they play in more than 5 or 10 games, their salary counts, or even one game or something you could figure out. So some of these guys who are second picks, instead of seeing them go over to Europe or China and make significantly than what they can make in the D League, I would love to see the NBA team staying on to them and keep them around.
I agree with most of what you said. The only thing that I don't agree on is the rookie scale contracts, and it's more just and you might be right, they might increase just a little bit. The problem is, I don't know which side is going to be pushing for the upscale on rookie scale contracts. From the owner's side, you know, they're looking at it as you know, up to 4 years of cheap production where they can actually see whether this player is worth it or not. And then you're looking at, you know, guys like Anthony Davis, who was just, I think this is the first year for his extension. You know, the Pelicans essentially got 2 years of an elite player at almost no money at all. And then, you know, from the player's side, you look at the guys who are really the head of the situation, and we're talking about LeBron James and Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony and all of those guys, and they don't really care if rookies make more money at this point. And you know, it's sort of it's not great for the rookies coming in, but I just don't know who is going to, you know, be on their side at this point, because the rookies have no leverage in these situations. Even right now, you're not going to see Karl Anthony Towns or Andrew Wiggins or some of those guys who are still on their rookie contract going in and negotiating for more money. And as long as there is a salary cap, more money for the rookies means less money for everybody else. You know, outside of maybe cap guys. And, you know, if Carl Anthony Towns is arguing for a greater rookie scale contract, he's not going to see that money because it's going to come in on the new rookies. And now there's going to be less money for him or whoever the other, whoever the next guy is on that next sort of tier. So I agree that they probably will be increased, but I don't know if they'll be increased very much because I think both sides sort of like where they are right now.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with you on that. I think the one thing is where the appreciation will come from it on their side is let's just get more money overall and we'll divert some of that to the rookies. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where you'll see is, you know, if they can get their percentage of the pie up a little bit, you know, I think they'll, you know, potentially look at saying, all right, let's put it in here. And there are actually some owners that are a little bit in favor of it, just because one of the things that they believe is with especially internal players, it might be more enticing for them to come over, mm-hmm. especially if they could help pay towards a buyout out of it with a little bit more. So I think you're going to see little tweaks like that. But I don't think all of a sudden you're going to see the first draft rookie scale be 10 or 12 million, but if they bump it up to, you know, 8 or so, might be a little bit more reasonable to start them off.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right there. Okay, so let's move over specifically to the Thunder. We're going to talk a little bit about their cap situation and just different things within their team. But first of all, unless, you know, you've been living under a rock or somewhere without internet or access or, you know, maybe even more extreme than that, Kevin Durant left on July 4th. He signed a one-year deal with the Golden State Warriors for his max, which is right around $26 million or something like that. But, Keith, I want you to explain why he took a one-year deal instead of signing something like a four-year max contract.
So I think there's two things at play here. The court, I think it was the opportunity for him to sign this one-year deal. What it does is it's him in there, obviously, at the max he can get this year, which that number wouldn't have changed regardless. But then if he goes into free agency next year, which all signs are that he will now have 10 years of service time, which puts him into the top-tier max salary range. So it's just, for example, this year of $4.4-ish million. Between those two starting salaries, so 26.5 versus almost 31. So that's a pretty big chunk of money, and then you times that out by the max raises, looking at a lot of money that he would leave on the table if he had locked into the full four-year max this year. So I think that's the main reason why he did it. It's the opportunity. I think it also gives him on the court an out if this fails for whatever reason, which I don't think it will, but if this really work out and doesn't go well, gives him the opportunity to opt out and move on to a different situation and go, so if this really turns out to be a bad idea. We're seeing a lot of players do these one plus deals. LeBron James is now, looks like that's going to be it for him for the next couple of years of keep doing those. And I think you'll see, especially with an uncertain cap world and not know what max contracts may or may not look like next summer, it made sense for Durant to do that. It was the most logical move he could have made.
Right. Okay, and I just want to preface this a little bit. Everything that we're going to be talking about for the next few minutes is strictly about money. We're going to talk about Russell Westbrook and his situation. And when we say what's better for Westbrook or what he should do, all we're talking about is in terms of money. We're not talking about any, you know, extraneous circumstances, whether he likes L.A. or, you know, the team would do better in Boston. All we're saying is if he wants to maximize his money, this is what he would be doing. And so everything that we just talked about with Kevin Durant is sort of the same with Russell Westbrook. You know, there was this situation back in the old CBA that the NBA actually allowed the Thunder to have to sign both Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, give them maximum five-year rookie extensions, which they didn't allow any other team at that time. So they're in the exact same situation in that Russell Westbrook currently has 8 years of service, has 1 year left on his deal, and then, you know, could hit the free agency market if he decides to. And I actually wrote something a little bit about that last week on today's Fast Break, which I'll post, or I'll link to the post underneath here. But, you know, Keith Smith, Russell Westbrook's agent, what would you advise Russell Westbrook to do in the upcoming months as far as renegotiating, extending his contract, or hit free agency?
So I'm probably I hope I don't completely turn off your entire fan base here, but I'd probably advise him to go ahead and hit free agency. Only reason I say that is because of the fact that we don't know what max contracts are going to look like. There's been some murmur of them changing the years of experience around and, you know, looking at that a little bit different. So we could see that potentially change. There's also the talk of where does your number land at. Now, what he can actually do, and he's in kind of a rare situation because he only makes only, in relative terms, $17.8 this year. So he can get a raise of almost $9 million this year, which is a little bit different than the other guys that have been talked about with this renegotiate and extend. He can really jump up it this year. I mean, $9 million is a lot. Then everything would trigger off that $9 million amount for him going forward. So money-wise, he's probably going to come out either close to the same or maybe even ahead if he does a renegotiate and extend. But just because of that uncertainty, my recommendation would be play it out and see. And then when you look at it on the court, who knows, you know, what the situation's going to be necessarily next summer. And the Thunder, I think it's something we're going to talk about in a little bit here. There's a lot of other guys who need paid in Oklahoma City too.
Yeah.
So what's that going to look like, you know, on the court? And they will, you know, despite the fact that they're sitting pretty good cap-wise right now, today at the moment, they will run out of cap space pretty quickly. And there's going to be that they're going to have to look like they want to pay the luxury tax. Those types of conversations will come up, you know, as we look into this. So we'll see, you know, where they ultimately land with it. But my recommendation would be go ahead, run, you know, play out the year, hit free agency, and see where that takes you.
Yeah, he's definitely in a situation that's a little different. Now, I think James Harden did almost the exact same thing where he was making the max, and he renegotiated his contract for his current max under the current situation and extended, I think, exactly to when he would have 10 years of service. I might be wrong on that last part, but I know he renegotiated and extended this offseason. And, you know, Russ is in a similar situation. I don't know exactly what he's thinking. Like I said, and like I mentioned in the piece, if he's just looking to maximize his contract, he'll renegotiate and extend for 1 year, hit his 10 years of service, and do whatever. But as you mentioned, that could all change next summer when they decide to change that 10 years of service. And currently it's at 35%. It's actually a little under 35% when you're figuring the max. But it, you know, maybe they just get rid of the you know, max contract. Maybe they just say you can make as much as you want, which would probably be terrible for some of those mid-tier players. But you know, that all could happen. So let's say let's just do both scenarios now. If Russ chooses to not sign the extension, and now you are you can put on your general manager hat, you're Sam Presti. Do you look to trade Westbrook? And if so, what package would you expect in return?
Well, that's really tough. I don't know that you can run the risk of watching two superstars, arguably top five, definitely top 8 to 10 players in the league, run the risk of watching two of them leave back-to-back summers. That feels like no matter how good the rest of your team is, that's something that a franchise. So I would continue to put the pressure on, see if he can sign. If he won't sign, I think you have to explore it. My thing would be I would try to do it now versus later, because I don't know that your offers are going to get better as the trade deadline is. I just think Russ is not the easiest guy, I think, to just bring in and integrate into a team. A corner spot up shooter that you can just throw out there and, hey, do your thing. Like, you're going to have to really change who you are as a team. I think a team's going to want more than, you know, 30-ish games before the playoffs come. Not that, you know, 29 other teams in the league wouldn't love to have him. But I think you run the getting a better package now than if you wait. So that's one of the things that we're going to see here is I think there's been, you know, maybe some poking around, some conversations. I know, in fact, many teams have been calling OKC to say, hey, can we get our hands Westbrook, trying to see what that looks like. And so far that's all been, you know, rebuffed and no, we intend to hang on to him, which is great. And that's ultimately what I'd love to see. I want to see him stay there. You know, I want to see him, you know, stay. I wanted to see KD stay too, ultimately. But I think if you're pressing, you have to at least give it consideration to move on it. I think we've seen he is aggressive, right? He did it with James Harden, you know, before he was due to be paid. He moved him off, got a pretty good package back that put the team, you know, into, you know, move them, you know, on to continue to be contenders. And we might see him do something here with Russ.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I do want to clarify something. When you say trade now, I think you just mean trade by, you know, Halloween or November or whatever it is, or even maybe by training camps, because I don't think Russell Westbrook's value diminishes if you trade him on, what is it, August 2nd, as opposed to, you know, October 31st. I think you'll basically get the same value. Or actually, I do think you'll get the exact same value. Now, there's something to be said for the team getting him in there before training camp, before, you know, some of those runs with the team that he's going to see before preseason games and all of that. But, you know, once the season starts, that timer really starts. You know, it's going to, for every second he's on the court, his value's probably going to diminish. It's almost like driving a car off the lot. Now, it's not going to diminish at the same rate or anything like that, but, you know, trading him now as opposed to trading him at the trade deadline, there's going to be a noticeable difference in the return.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you,
but you're fine.
That's exactly what I meant, was, yeah. You know, by now, I mean any time up to the start of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think you're right. Plus, the other thing you run the risk is he doesn't have the best track record health-wise.
Mm-hmm.
He's been nicked up before. He's had some very serious injuries. Well, so I think you run that risk of, you know, what if you're sitting there and week before Christmas he goes down and gets hurt? Now where you're at. You run the risk of still losing him, and you're see much of a package back in return. As for what I'd look for in return is, I'd top flight young talent and picks. You know, I think that's the best thing you can get in return. You don't want those middling veterans. Those guys are, you know, if anything, they're going to help you a little. I think the Thunder still have a good enough team that they're still interesting and competitive even without him. And I think you would pivot to, you know, start branding your team around some of the other young talent coming in. But that's what you'd look for, you know, that there's good, young, ready-to-play players, plus the best picks that you could get possible from whoever that projects to be.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's say he signs an extension, and then let's be specific here. He signs the one-year extension so that he's signed for two additional seasons. One, do you look to trade him? And if so, what package would you expect back?
If he signs the extension, and then if he signs no, I'd keep him and I'd let it play out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd, you know, see that as a sign of, hey, maybe he wants here in Oklahoma City, he wants to help us build to, you know, what we want to be. I know that feeling out there that he's just going to come out like a madman and, you know, potentially try to average a triple double. And I think we've all seen what he can do, especially when he's a little angry. And I think that's fair to say he's angry right now. So I think if he's signing any form of extension, I'd keep him.
Mm-hmm.
If he package, as I said, it doesn't change for me. No matter what, I want back young talent and picks. You know, that's my package no matter what his specific situation is.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. If he decides to sign an extension, that means that, you know, for one reason or another, he wants to be in Oklahoma City, even if it's just for two more seasons. And at that point, you're getting, you know, prime Russell Westbrook. And as much as I love Russ, his game doesn't look like it's going to age very well because it's so reliant on athleticism. So if you can get ages 27, 28, 29 out of Russ, and, you know, either at the end of that look to move him, or if he agrees to sign in Oklahoma City and someone wants to join him, or whatever happens there, I think, you know, if you can get Russ to agree to that contract, you do it, and you try to put a package around him. You try to build with some of those young players. And, you know, fortunately for Oklahoma City, a lot of those young players are already on roster. You know, and unfortunately for Oklahoma City, some of those guys are gonna look to get paid in the near future. So let's talk about some of those. And one guy You know, if you've read my stuff or listened to this for any amount of time, you probably know that that I love, I like his game, I like what he's able to do, but now he's going to be a free agent and you're going to have to decide what to do with him, and that's Andre Roberson. Dre turns 25 in December. You know, he's a good, versatile defender, and we saw some of the things that he can do in the Warriors series. You know, he can guard, you know, one through small ball four, and he can do it at a near elite or an elite level. You know, he improved his true shooting percentage to 56.6% last year, and I think league average was 53-54% defending on position. Now, while that's only a 9.1 usage, we're going to ignore those details. Obviously, he can't shoot, and that's been one of his major flaws. But as someone who's a little bit of an outsider as far as Oklahoma City goes, just what are your general thoughts on Roberson?
So I actually like him. I think that he was, and I could be wrong on this, but I'm almost positive, a power forward. And
yeah, at Colorado.
He's transitioned. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And now he's transitioned to be really an NBA wing. One, that's already a win. Like, you don't see that. That never happens, you know, with guys, at least not desperately, at any rate. So that has always been one of the things that's been really impressive to me with this game. I think he's a terrific defensive player. You know, I think people want him to be a three guy, and he's more or less been missing the three part of that. But I think he's a good player. This year, you're not going to have Durant in there, right? So when you have guys like Durant and Westbrook, I always say there's only one ball, right? You can't play with two basketballs. So you kind of want guys who are content to just play a role, hang out, do their thing, spot up in the corner. Hopefully if they can knock down those shots, that's so much the better. But if he's at least an elite defender, which Roberson is, it's Roberson, right?
Yeah, Roberson. Yeah,
Roberson. I'm probably going to say that wrong 10 more times. For what he is, that's great, you know, to be that elite defender. I actually think we might see him do a little bit more this year instead of being just relegated to kind of floating around the perimeter. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him, you know, get it inside a little more, get to the basket some more. I don't think he's going to be a game guy or even 15. I think we might see a little bit more of him, out of him offensively. So I would definitely, you know, look to keep him around and keep him in town.
Yeah, I really like Roberson. I think, and I've said this for a while now, I think his best position is a small ball four because he showed some things in the playoffs last year that he hadn't really shown in the past. When he gets the ball sort of on that short roll, he's able to make some decisions and make some passes either to the corner or to the dunk man or whoever it is. You know, those were things that we hadn't noticed before, probably because he's always been relegated to the corner or, you know, to wherever it is where he's not going to touch the ball and he takes an awkward shot that's either going to swish or, you know, miss everything. So it's just a little awkward with Roberson, but, you know, if he can maybe play some small ball 4 minutes, and it's a little tough with all of the big men in Oklahoma City, and you know the power forward and center positions are probably the deepest in Oklahoma City right now, which doesn't look like it's going to mean that Roberson plays some of that small ball four. But if he can get some time there, I think that you know what we saw in the playoffs could prove to be some of what we see for you know here on out for Roberson. So let's pretend that he is free agency right now. So we don't know what happens in the 2016-17 season. So Roberson, all the three players that we're going to talk about, they're all restricted free agents, which means that if the Oklahoma City Thunder decide to extend the qualifying offer, that they have the right of first refusal, meaning they can match any offer that or any offer sheet that they sign, as well as negotiate a contract with the free agent. So let's say that Oklahoma City extends the qualifying offer, which as it currently stands, they certainly would. Let's say Roberson signs an offer sheet for another team. What sort of contract do you see Roberson signing to under the, presupposed $102 million salary cap?
I think you could see him easily get around 10 to 12 million to start off. And I know that some people might be choking right now hearing that, but I do think surprise me just because he is that good of a defender. He's also, we didn't really talk about this, but about saying when you mentioned him playing some small ball four, he's a great rebounder, mm-hmm. too. You know, really good rebounder. And those are two skills that are always in demand in the league. And if he can show just a little bit more offensively, you know, I think teams would be, you know, happy to pay that amount of money. That wouldn't surprise me at all to see him get that 10 to 12 million a start, or even an average value of that range.
Yeah, that would be interesting. That would, I think that's probably a little higher than I was expecting. I don't know if that's higher than I would actually pay him. I think that's more team specific. For this iteration of the Thunder, if we're saying Russell Westbrook walks, I probably would, you know, as much as I love Dre, I probably wouldn't want to pay him 10 to 12 million. You know, and that's not that big of a hit. We're talking about a 10% of your salary cap, and that's more the way you want to look at things from here on out, yeah. because those numbers are just, you know, they're going to be too much to take. You know, you're looking at, you know, like we said, Russell Westbrook right now is we'll just round and say an $18 million player. So for Robertson to be a $10 million player seems ludicrous, but, you know, considering the salary caps in which they were signed, that's probably, I was probably going to say, you know, 7 to 9, somewhere around there. So that's not that far out of the range. And, you know, if he's able to remain that defender for 3-4 more years, I guess that's the next question I want to ask. If you're talking about a 10 to 12 million dollar number for Robertson, how long are you willing to pay that?
I'd give him 3-4 years on that number. I think for that amount of time, he's still going to be a pretty good athlete, still be a good defender. It would take him to, what, his late 20s at that point. Right. So I think you're getting him pretty much as what he is now. So I'd be more than comfortable to give him that. I'm not, you know, 4, maybe 3 with an option, something like that in that range could be doable. But, you know, if that's what it really took. And I just want to tag on to something you said, too, about it would depend on your team structure. If you don't need a guy like him, then obviously you're not going to pay him just to pay him. And that's where I think, you know, that'll be the determining factor for him as he, you know, hits free agency next summer. It's going to be, I think he might prioritize fit more than money. But let's face it, he hasn't made a lot of money yet in relative terms compared to, you know, his brethren. So I think it'll be probably a mix of those. If he can get paid and have a good fit on a good team, then you might see him, you know, make that jump.
Yeah, that's definitely very interesting. I'm going to take a little shot here, only because it's out there. But what you talked about with team fit and Andre Robertson, that's sort of my problem with the Portland Trail Blazers offseason, is that now they're locked into a lot of players who are a pretty good value. You know, if CJ does what he did this year, which I'm not sure he could, but if he does it again, then, you know, whatever that contract is probably a fine number. Mo Harkless is probably a fine number. I don't like Evan Turner, but, you know, all those other guys are fine. But now you're paying the luxury tax for, you know, a 5th seed, a 6th seed, and I don't see that team. I love Dame. I don't see him improving enough to be a number one on a contender like, you know, Portland's built currently. So I don't know. That's a little shot that I had to take, I guess, in division. That you can. Do you have any thoughts on Portland's offseason?
I'm actually probably the one person outside of Portland who likes it. Mm-hmm. I actually think Evan Turner's going to be fantastic for them. Mm-hmm. He got too much money. Let me preface it with that. Mm-hmm. They gave him, you know, an amount of money that not imagine any other team was lining up to pay him. But what I actually think he's going to do is I think he's going to be their point guard. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a backup point guard on the roster right now. Shabazz Napier, maybe. It ended up being more often than not McCollum, right? Slid over there when Lillard needed a break. You bring Turner in, and this is something Boston had a lot of success with last year. They'd play lineups with Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, and Turner. And Turner would, in effect, function as the point guard, allowing Bradley Thomas to play off the ball and run through screens. I'm seeing a lot of those double stagger screens for McCollum with Turner handling the ball up top. And if you cheat off him to help on the screen, he can get to the basket. He has an exceptional mid-range jump shot. And that's something that Portland we've seen, as everybody else in the league has said, no, don't take those ever. Portland still embraced that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, hey, go ahead and take those shots. And he can get to the hoop and finish. He's a good rebounder. He's a good defender. So, yeah, he got too much money, but I think he's a good fit. And for Portland, I agree with you. I think they locked up a 4 or 5 seed. Yeah, in my mind, is what they did. Is they locked up a whole bunch of guys that are going to be probably no better than the 4 or 5 seed. But none of them are on such truly awful contracts that they've become untradeable. So I think they can, still move pieces and do some things. And it's a question of, all right, is Portland really a market that's going to attract marquee free agents? Probably not. So I think it's important for them to lock up a lot of their own guys and get those guys, in and on contract and stay. I love them. I think just because I think we're going to see Oklahoma City take a step, I think we're going to see Portland and Utah fight it out at the top of the division this year and see if teams, ends up taking it. And then we'll see long-term because I like OKC's future a little bit more than I like Portland's. And I definitely like Utah's probably the next 3-4 years more than I like Portland's as well.
Yeah, I do too. And as far as Portland goes, they needed just somebody else that could dribble. They had CJ and they had Dame, and after that they had crap a little bit, but no one else could just dribble the ball very well. So in that light, I do think that Evan Turner will bring something to them. But like you said, they paid him too much money. And while there's been this thing going around that not every team can win the championship, and as someone who watched and tweeted that immediately after Steph Curry drained that three in overtime over the Thunder, I 100% agree with that. The problem is then you don't have to pay the luxury tax for that team, and that looks like maybe not this season, but they're probably going to hit when CJ's extension hits next season. And then, they don't really have any avenues to improve their team. They can do it through the draft, but then they're not going to get that impactful player immediately. So they're going, and with all of these middling contracts, they can improve and trade and maybe get some kind of player that's out there. But I don't love it. I would have loved for them to have kept some sort of flexibility. And I like watching them play, and now it just seems like they're going to do what they're going to do now. What we've seen the last couple of years. They have all of the exact same pieces, and I sort of think that they overperformed last year. I don't, maybe they'll be a 4 or 5 seed, but the West is still awesome with obviously Golden State, and you still got San Antonio, and you've got some other teams out there that you talked about Utah, and the Clippers are still there for this year. If something goes wrong, that could be a 6-7 seed, and if you're paying 6-7 seed for or you're paying a luxury tax for a 6-7 seed, you might want to talk to some of the fans in Brooklyn about that over the last few years. But this is all we're talking on August 2nd, so whatever. Let's move on to the second restricted free agent for Oklahoma City next season, and that's Victor Oladipo. And as someone who's based out of Orlando, you probably have a better perspective on what Victor can do. I think he's been a little overrated in what he's done and just some of his raw production, but he definitely has the skills and sort of the pedigree as someone who was drafted high a couple of years ago. But just break down Oladipo's game a little bit for me.
So I think you've seen his game in some respect, Russell Westbrook. He's not as good as Russ, obviously, but they are kind of similar as players. Victor can get to the basket pretty well. He handles the ball well. He is a very, very, very streaky shooter. So while his overall numbers tend to look pretty good, he does have a game where he goes 7 for 8 from three, and then the next three games he's combined 2 for 12. Mm-hmm. And that was really what wasn't working in Orlando was Oladipo and Elfrid Payton as a backcourt was just never going to shoot well enough to work out in Orlando. So they made the move where they really said, we're going to make our bed with Evan Fournier and have him in guard and move on from Oladipo. And then obviously to acquire Serge Ibaka and those kind of things, it all kind of came together. But I think you were going to see Oladipo moved regardless if the Ibaka or not came up. I had the sense that they were going with Fournier all along there. I think Oklahoma City fans will like his game. He always plays hard. He's very likable. When he's fully healthy, he can get up and out of the gym, on lobs. I think him and Russ have the opportunity to be really in backcourt. what I worry about is, let's say they are the long-term backcourt, and you get to the, are they going to be, excuse me, good enough shooting to win game when you're playing the same team every night? And they can build their strategy around that.
Yeah, and that's the problem. You talked about Payton and Oladipo in the backcourt. Russ is, you know, in terms of volume and efficiency, probably the worst three-point shooter in the league currently. And so I don't love the fit of Oladipo and Westbrook together. Now, it's also going to be, you know, one of the most athletic backcourts in the league. But, you know, you're talking about those two, and if Robertson starts and if Steven Adams starts, that's three or four guys that can't shoot. And even if it's Ilyasova, you know, he it's not like he's got enough three-point shooting in him to make up for the other four guys who can't shoot outside of, you know, 16, 18 feet or whatever. So those lobs are useless if you have four guys packed in the paint. But with that said, I do like sort of the off-ball playmaking that Oladipo brings. The Magic used him as sort of a de facto point guard a couple of years ago just to sort of hone some of those skills. And, you know, he's if you just look at his raw numbers, which I you know, said a little earlier, I thought were a little overrated, but he's a decent passing guy. He, you know, he can rebound. He has a reputation of defending, even though a lot like some of the guys on the Thunder, he's better on ball than off ball because he gets a little lost and gets in no man's land and doesn't have the greatest feet, but he's still young. He turns 25 at the end of the season in May, so there's time for him to sort of develop in Billy Donovan's system. And the nice thing about him is that he's a restricted free agent, which Sam Presti's shown the knack for trading for those because he can, you know, the team has control. Now, Oladipo's qualifying offer is quite a bit larger than the other two that we're going to talk about. It's $13 million, which he's going to make more than that in the open market. It just, it, like I said, it's you know, 13% of the salary cap, so it seems larger. But what do you expect his number to be next season? And again, let's say that we don't know what happens in the upcoming season. All we know is what happens in the 2015-16 season and before.
Yeah, I think the fear is that it's going to approach a max contract because you're going to have a team like, say, Brooklyn that has plenty of cap space and will still have plenty of cap space. They obviously extended pretty far, like Tyler Johnson and Alan Crabb, who I think Oladipo is better than both of those guys. So that's my fear from a Thunder standpoint. And I could see a team doing what Portland did to OKC with Cantor, where they gave him the big contract just really to match. I could see that being something that happens just because I don't think they want to trade Borady's in the centerpiece of the what they got back for Serge Ibaka. And I don't think they want to run the risk of Durant leaves, Westbrook leaves, and then Oladipo, who you got in return, another core guy, now he potentially leaves. So somebody's going to get paid in that group, and my fear is that it could be Oladipo and that their hand is forced in paying him.
Yeah, I'm going to be really not happy if the Thunder end up paying him the max. You know, and like I said, I think Oladipo's fine, and he's probably going to be a, you know, a productive player in the upcoming years. But, man, paying that guy, I don't know, $23, $24 million, whatever his max is going to be at that point, that just seems like not a great allocation of your resources, especially when you have all this money tied up in Cantor, and if you have the money tied up in Russ. And we just talked about paying Dre $10 to $12 million. You know, if it's a team like Brooklyn, then that's fine because they don't really have, you know, they're not going to do anything in the next couple of years. And just a little minutia here, Oladipo, if they don't extend the max qualifying offer, if they just extend the qualifying offer, then it has to be at least two seasons. So let's say that Brooklyn signs them for two or maybe even 3 years. That's fine because they don't own any of their own draft picks over that time period. So, you know, I don't hate it for Brooklyn as much as I do for Oklahoma City, but that could just be because I'm a fan of Oklahoma City and not Brooklyn. you know, it's fine. Like I said, Oladipo's a fine player, and maybe he'll realize something under Billy Donovan and a system that, you know, is maybe a little more offensive-minded than it was in Orlando under Scott Skiles. But
I can guarantee you it will be a more offensive minded than
I was just trying to be generous there. I was yeah. Billy Donovan showed that he can do something, granted with two of the best offensive players in the league, but sure. You know, that they took a jump more than they had in the previous seasons under Scotty Brooks. So
and if I can jump on one thing you said there too,
please.
You hit a really good point. It is the fact that Oladipo could get that contract so entered into why the Magic were willing to trade him. Because mm-hmm. he was Rob Hennigan's guy. That was his first draft pick. As much as anyone on the team, he was the face of the franchise. They, you know, maybe didn't have a true friend, but he was the last guy introduced at home games, which we all know is kind of a big deal. You know, he did a lot of the, you know, fire up the fan videos and those kind of things. So he was very well liked here. People in Orlando loved him. I think they're going to transition that now to be more of Aaron Gordon's role. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, really excited about him and what he can bring to the team. So he's the new kind of franchise darling here in Orlando. But I think that was a big chunk of why it was maybe now's the time to. I've been saying for years that I think Oladipo's ceiling is as a high-end sixth man, really, really good team, because he can play both guard positions, can come in and give you some pretty good offense, and that's where I think you ultimately. You know, where his ceiling should be. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he does turn into a, you know, top flight, you know, shooting guard and really becomes more than what he's shown to this point. And I think that's what OKC's bet on.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is there aren't a lot of shooting guards currently in the NBA, especially that are going to be free agents at their 25 years old come Victor Oladipo's, you know, 2017 summer. So, you know, that with almost, you know, it's your high demand and low supply. You're going to make a lot of money just in that market. But as I said before, I would just be a little disappointed if the Thunder were the ones to pay Victor Oladipo that number. I'd feel comfortable paying him. It sounds a little almost gross to say, but you know, somewhere in the $15 to $17 million range, just because he is only 25. He'll be 26, I guess, at the end of next season. And you're still paying for what he could produce at that point. You know that even at the end of that contract, there's still a chance that he's going to be a productive player. You know, that's just probably something I'm a little more comfortable with, although I know that's probably unrealistic, and some team out there is going to pay him a little more than that. The last restricted free agent we're going to talk about is Big Steve. It's Steven Adams. I'm going to talk a little bit about him first, and then I'll let you come in. Steven Adams just turned 23. One of the things that he showed this year that's an improvement on the last several is he showed the ability to guard the perimeter sort of on switches. I thought he did a really good job on Steph Curry all series and during the regular season. He did a really good job just containing whoever it was on the perimeter, and it didn't really matter who it was. It was just the, you know, the best ball handlers, whoever, you know, and they'd still score. It's not like he was some shutdown guy, but he did a good job sort of funneling where they were supposed to go. He was also, you know, a good rim protector, although it you know, at times it helps when Serge Ibaka is out there, and you know, Kevin Durant with his long arms, it helps that he had those other guys, and you know, Robertson, who we talked about a little earlier. He definitely showed some chemistry on offense with Russell Westbrook in the pick and rolls. You know, there were several times, you know, almost per game where he would dive to the rim on a pick and roll, and either Russell Westbrook would get a wide open layup because both guys would go to Steven Adams, or Russell Westbrook would have a wide open lob to Steven Adams because both guys would collapse on Westbrook. So, you know, he's definitely developed a little chemistry there. He's actually a good to probably, I'll just stick with good, passer out of the pick and roll. He's able to do sort of that short of the pick and roll like we talked about with Robertson a little earlier. He's actually pretty good with that. You know, on the perimeter, he's not uncomfortable out there. Now, I do have some worries about him anchoring a, you know, top five, top ten defense or whatever it is, because we've never seen him do it on his own. You know, for all the offensive talk that we've had about Kevin Durant over the last few years, like the Kevin Durant that we saw in the Warriors series has shown flashes. Like, he's a very good defender, and maybe not because of his instincts or anything like that, but because he's freaking, like, got a 7'3 wingspan. He's just huge. And we've never really seen Steven Adams do it without Serge Ibaka and do it without Kevin Durant. In the one season where Kevin Durant was injured, the Thunder had a terrible defense. So, and I know Adams has improved, and there's definitely thought that maybe he can do this. And you know, with Victor Oladipo in front of him and Robertson in front of him, he can still probably do some of those things. But all of this talk about Adams being a surefire, no doubt, maximum contract player, I worry a little bit about, just because, you know, we've never seen him do it before, and the guy's still only 23 years old, even though, you know, he sort of looks like, you know, 30 or 35 because of all that facial hair and those tattoos and all of that. But I'll stop my rant, and now I want to hear some of your thoughts on Steven Adams.
So as far as I'm getting paid, I have two things. Bigs get paid. Young bigs get paid even more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be what we're going to see with him. I think there is, again, another opportunity there that this could approach a max contract. I will openly admit and tell everyone that will listen, I was 100% wrong on Steven Adams. I didn't think he was going to be an NBA player at all. I didn't like him coming out of college. I just didn't think he was very good. I thought he was going to be a complete zero offensively. And I just didn't see enough of him defensively to see that. And I was wrong. He's obviously turned into, at this point, a good player for all the reasons you mentioned. And I'm a little less concerned about him anchoring a defense. I think he can do it. I think he moves his feet well enough to do that. He's got good size. He's also, I affectionately say this, he's a jerk. He's not afraid to drop somebody. You know, when they come to the hoop and, you know, put a body on him and knock him down. And, you know, that's a throwback to the guys I, you know, grew up kind of loving and watching. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, great to see, you know, a guy who will do that. Obviously, you know, he's not afraid to get in there and mix it up with Draymond Green, as we saw in the playoffs. So I think he's a terrific player. I think he's going to be really good. And I don't have an issue with paying him, you know, a lot of money. My issue comes for exactly what we talked about earlier is, what do you do with Oladipo? What do you do with Robertson? What do you do with Westbrook? At some point, you can't have all these guys making between $15 and over $20 million a year. It's just not realistic for any team. So I think that's going to be what depends in how they order that order. Like, what order do the Thunder prioritize those players is going to be what makes the difference.
Yeah, there's, with everything that I said, all the reservations that I had on Steven Adams, he's getting at or near the max, and with restricted free agents, you can negotiate and sign them to a contract up until October 31st of their last year, which for all of these three guys, it's this year. And of course, if they don't agree to some sort of extension, then they will just have the rights to match whatever, so long as they extend the qualifying offer next year. And I sort of expect Steven Adams to be one of those guys. I think that he might ink a contract this year before the October 31st deadline. Just, you know, because I think the Thunder want to show that they're in this for Steven Adams. Like, they want Steven Adams for the long haul. They want him for 4 years. And maybe they do something like 3 years and a player option just to give Adams some of that, give him something for signing a contract early as opposed to waiting until the summer, so they sort of know what they're doing. But the problem with that is the Thunder will lose a whole bunch of cap space going into next summer if they do that. So, you know, it's a little bit twofold there. But if you're asking me who could sign before the October 31st deadline, either it's going to be Robertson on a cheap deal because they don't want him to hit the market and get to the Keith Smith special $10 to $12 million, or Steven Adams to his max, just to say, here it is, we're going to give it to you right now.
Yeah, if they signed Adams to an extension before the season starts, it wouldn't surprise me, too, if they could potentially get him at a little bit under market value.
Yeah, Yeah, that would be nice.
Well, just that tends to happen sometimes with big guys, especially. And that's, yeah, so I'm with you there. And I'm with you on the balancing the need for cap space next year versus what goes on right now. As it projects right now, they should be okay almost regardless. So it wouldn't shock me at all if they could get him to, say, take 13, 14, or even up to $15 million in advance rather than let him hit the market and start pushing that 20 number.
Right.
It wouldn't shock me if they jumped on it.
Right. That's the other thing is if they do it early, there's a possibility that they could ask, you know, they could say, here's $20 million as opposed to the 24 or whatever his max would be next summer, something that they could do.
Yeah, and one other thing with that too is I think what you touched on it with, you could see them do like a 3 year and a player option. Mm-hmm. That way he gets back on the market when he's going to be 26 years old. He's still right in the middle of his prime and those kind of things. So that could be a little bit of that give of, you know, hey, sign with us now for a little under and we'll give you that player option to get back out there, you know, in the middle of your career and, you know, make that, you know, hit that second big contract.
Right. Okay, so, well, oh, here's something that just came across. Anthony Slater, who has covered the Thunder for the last few years for the Oklahoman, is joining the Warriors, or to cover the Warriors for San Jose Mercury News Bay Area News Group, which is interesting. He's been a Thunder writer and a very good one for a few years now, and apparently the Bay Area have decided that he just needs to keep covering KD, which is interesting. Congrats to Anthony Slater out there. Okay, so let's take a couple of Twitter questions. We had a couple of come across. David Ramil, who we talked about pre-recording, said, who's the best option to start at power forward, and will Adams' development be quickened or stunted with the roster upheaval? So I'll take the questions first, I guess, to give you some time to think about them. The best option to start at power forward is 100% Ersan Ilyasova, and that's, you know, like we talked about earlier, because if you start Enes Kanter, there are no shooters. And while people want to push back sort of on this, you know, you have to shoot threes, you have to extend your range and all of that point. If you have no three-point shooters, then you're going to have no driving lanes. You know, if you have those guys that have to cover in the corner, they have to guard your Anthony Morrows or whoever it is in the corner or the wing, then that extends those driving lanes for Russell Westbrook and Victor Oladipo and, you know, makes that dunker position a little easier for Steven Adams or, you know, that passing from the mid-post from Andre Roberson, all of which we've talked about in the last few minutes. It's easier when you have shooters on the floor. So while it's not absolutely necessary that all five players need to shoot, you got to have one, or you got to have two. And Russ is more than willing to take them, but he's sure as hell shown that he's not going to make them. So, you know, at this point, it's got to be Ilyasova. And while I was down on Kanter, and he probably proved me wrong to some degree last season, you can't start and play him and Steven Adams big minutes this season because, you know, again, you saw what's going to happen against the Warriors last season. Do you want to answer that one, and then we'll go on to the second one?
Yeah, sure. I don't have a lot to add to it except I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely for the reasons of what do you do when you run into a team that wants to play small or pulls Kanter or Adams away from the basket defensively? It's just not going to go well. And I think people are actually really going to like Ilyasova's game. He's a good shooter, as you referenced. He's actually a very, very good rebounder. He's probably at least, if not better than Serge Ibaka on that end of the court as far as the rebounding goes. And he's an underrated defender. He actually takes a lot of charges. He's a really good positional defender and gets in there and mixes it up. And there's, you know, content to kind of sacrifice his body. So while he's a very different defender than Serge Ibaka is, he's not going to block a lot of shots or anything like that, he's still a good defender. So I think you're going to see the Thunder fans will like Ilyasova more than they maybe think they might right now today, and I think it's a lock that he'll be the starter probably all season long.
Yeah, I hope so. I've liked he's got some sort of playmaking ability, especially from the big position that he can do. Like I said, he shoots well. He has been a decent rebounder in the past, although, you know, there's sort of this weird, like, every other year thing with him. You can go check out his stats on Basketball Reference for that. But, you know, if he's only signed for 1 year. If it proves to be a disappointment, then so be it. He walks at the end of this year, and you can use that cap space elsewhere. So I'm fine with that. The second question that David had was, will Adams' development be quickened or stunted with the roster upheaval? Steve Adams is a weird dude, man. I think that it's just like, it's just going to continue to be Steve being Steve. Like, I think he's just going to continue at whatever pace that he's been at, which has been pretty damn good. Now, I don't see him as like top five center in the league good. I think especially in this day and age, it's important that you are a very good defender at the center position and that you're not a negative on the offensive end. And Steven Adams is certainly not a negative, and he's proven to be a pretty good defender at this point. Like we mentioned earlier, he's going to be 23 for all of next season. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to hurt him at all. And if anything, I think maybe putting the ball in his hands a little more or just relying on him a little more on defense, funneling everything to him a little bit more is just going to quicken his development a little bit. You know, you saw some of the stuff last year where the Thunder started switching on the perimeter, something that they had never done in the past because Adams could and because Ibaka could. And, you know, that's not something you can always do with Cantor, and that's not something you could do with Perk in the past and all of that. So if anything, I would say quicken, but more than likely it's just going to remain constant.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I think you're just going to see him continue to develop as he is. I don't think it's going to make a big difference. I don't think because Durant's gone, you're going to all of a sudden see them dumping the ball into him, 15, 20 times in the post or anything like that. That's not going to be how, things will work. So I think he's just going to continue to be what he is, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, second. I said that was from David Ramil. Follow him at DRamil13 on Twitter. This next guy, Aaron Johnson, who is A. Johnson Sports, asks, how good can this Thunder team be? Everyone seems to be counting them out, even though they have a top five player in the league. I think that they will be a 6, 7, 8 seed, something like that, depending on, I think if everything breaks well, they'll get the 5 seed. If things don't go well, maybe 8 or just miss the playoffs, although I still think this team is too talented with Russell Westbrook to miss the playoffs. I think that they, I'm just going to call him top 10 because I don't really want to argue about how good he is, but I think Westbrook's a top 10 player. I think Adams is probably a top 10 center. I think Ilyasova's a good shooter. I think, Dre's one of the better defenders in the league and at least most versatile, if nothing else. I just think that they're too talented. One guy we haven't talked about at all is Cameron Payne, who, if healthy, he had Jones fracture or he had a surgery earlier in the summer, but he's projected to be back at the beginning of the season, although as a Thunder fan, we all know how that goes. I think he's more than capable as a backup. He's not good defensively, but we've also watched Russell Westbrook on defense for the last however many years, and he's nothing either. So I think Payne's, a very good backup point guard. I think they're almost 6 to 8 in the playoffs no matter what. I think that's the ceiling and the floor for them. And, I talked about this a little bit on the last pod, but although I would much rather Kevin Durant be in Oklahoma City for the 2016-17 season, I'm excited because it's something that I've never seen from the Thunder. I've never seen them, sort of on this middling, might be good, might not be good, we're not really sure how everything's going to work. And we have cap room, we have draft picks that are lottery protected for the next couple of years, we have a draft pick next year, lottery protected for the year after that. So there are things for Sam Presti to work on, and we get to see sort of how good he is as a general manager, how good Westbrook is with everything around him. I don't know. I'm excited for this upcoming season, even though as I stated, I would much rather have it with Kevin Durant than without.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. And I always go to, whenever I'm asked this question, we had this conversation a lot, both in Orlando and Las Vegas at Summer League, is we saw how close they were to making the playoffs when Durant was out for almost that whole season with the injury. And now you have a team that I think is better because I think all those players that are still there are better players than they were a couple seasons ago. And you have Russell Westbrook angry And I just think angry Russell Westbrook, it's a tongue twister,
is
going to be terrific. I don't know. I don't buy into that he's going to average a triple-double. I think that's probably going a little too far. But, you know, 25 points, 28 points a game, you know, 7-8 rebounds, 6-7 assists a game. I think those are all in play, and I think you're going to see him, you know, go really, really hard. So I'm with you. I think as long as he's there, they're going to be right in the mix for the playoffs. If he's not there, then they're, you know, like any other team that's going through a rebuilding phase, and you know, we'll see where they ultimately land out. But I think they have a chance to be better than people are thinking, and I think some people are writing them off way too early.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing that everyone has to remember is the year that Kevin Durant missed due to injury, the Thunder weren't able to replace his salary with anybody else. You know, it was just that's your maximum salary player that is now just gone. You don't get to replace that like you do now with whoever, you know, Victor Oladipo or Alex Abrines or whoever they've brought over the last couple of weeks. You don't get to do that. So, you know, now with Kevin Durant gone, you're able to replace some of those places. And not only that, or replace some of those players, excuse me, but not only that, but now their backups aren't like, you know, the Sebastian Telfairs or the Lance Thomases, who's good now, but at the time wasn't very good. You know, all of that stuff. There, just everything on down the line is just better than it was in the 2015-16 season, or sorry, 14-15 season. It's better now than it was then. You know, Cameron Payne and so on and so forth. Okay, so those are all the Twitter questions we have. Thanks again, and I actually give a shout-out to Aaron Johnson, who is A. Johnson Sports, who he writes for a couple of sites here. I know he writes for Palace of Pistons, which is good. He's all over the internet. Go and give that guy a follow, too. Thanks for the question. There's one piece that you have written recently for Real GM, which is titled, So You Want to Be an NBA Scout. And you don't have to give too much away if you don't want to. And it will be linked below in the post. Everyone go check this out. It was a fantastic piece and some really good insight from a lot of different people. But can you talk about, or I guess just a little about where, what you're talking about, what it's about, and everything?
Yeah, for sure. So I had the opportunity during Las Vegas Summer League to attend what's called Pro Scout School. And it's put on by TPG Sports Group. So TPG, the sports group. Their website's tpgsportsgroup.com, where you can see all their offerings, including all about Scout School. And it was one of those things where I had heard about the Scout School and said, you know, I'm very interested in learning more about this. And that when I got out there, my expectations were surpassed in every possible way. It was absolutely fantastic. It's one of those things where, you know, I think any of us who, you know, dare to call ourselves basketball fans believe that we're somewhat of amateur scouts, right? We, you know, I want to think we know, and, you know, this guy's good, this guy's not good, and especially as the draft closes in or free agency, this guy's a good fit, this guy isn't, this is who we should pick high, and those kind of things. So it was really interesting to go and learn, what do scouts look like? But beyond that part, or what do they look for, I should say. Beyond that part, what was really, really great to know was hearing them talk about what the life of a scout is like. And it's one of those things where I think a lot of us say, oh, I'd you know, quit my job today and I'd go be an NBA scout. To find out that there's, you know, six different types of scouts out there, that there are scouts that the advanced scout, for example, they're actually a member of the coaching staff, but their whole job is to go listen to play calls, do play diagrams, and help teams, help their team know how to defend the offensive sets from the other team and know what's coming. And to hear that scout, which Stephen Giles was the presenter on that, he's the advanced scout for the Cavs, so obviously knows what he's talking about, helped them win a title. He went through a whole presentation. Part of his presentation was to explain, this is how we blew up the last couple of offensive possessions for the Warriors, because we knew what was coming. And it was part of his role was to prep the team for knowing that was coming, and then for the team to then execute it. But to hear him talk about how from the beginning of October all the way through the playoffs, he was home two consecutive days, like two or three times all year outside of the All-Star break. That's the thing I think some people miss. You know, you're never sleeping in your own bed. to hear these scouts talk about the sacrifice that they make to give up, you know, missed birthdays, missed weddings, anniversaries, graduations, all kinds of things like that, because they're always somewhere in the world, you know, watching basketball, doing those kind of things. Those were the things that made it more real, you know, for me, made these people real folks that you could really learn from and understand what it is that they do. So it was a fantastic experience. I highly recommend it. Beyond that, the other big piece of it was, if you're looking for a career in basketball, this is the place you need to be going, because there were GMs there, there were scouts there, there were some agents present, there were media folks present, there was all kinds of networking opportunities, which is something they hammer home and build. This is your opportunity to make those connections and to build, you know, those relationships with those folks. If you read the piece, you'll see relationships is something I think I hit on probably no less than 100 times in the piece. So it's all about that. It's building those. And that's, you know, this opportunity to get in front of some of those people and present for why, you know, what is it you want to do to be, you know, do you want to be in basketball? One of the things that was really cool, Pete Filo, who he was the former executive with the Pacers, one of their international scouts for a long time, and worked in the NBA for a number of organizations. He's the founder of TPG, and he started this whole thing, and he started it because he was often asked, what does a scout do? What does a scout look for? And what is the life of a scout like? So he said, you know what? There's nothing else out there. I'm going to start this up. And it's just taken off like crazy. And one of the things that he hits on in the school, and he says this a lot, and I had a chance to have a good couple of conversations with him, was it's not enough to say I am passionate about basketball and I'm a hard worker. So was everybody else who was in the room of the 300 people or so in the room. Though everybody is passionate, everybody is a hard worker, everybody loves basketball. So what can you do to be different, bring a niche to a team and prove to them, you know, hey, I'm your guy, I'm the one you want, you know, working, you know, for you and beside you doing those things. So it was a terrific experience. I highly encourage everybody to, you know, check out the piece and just, you know, learn a little bit more of what NBA scouts do, different types of scouts in the NBA, and some about what their life is. But beyond that, hit up tpgsportsgroup.com. Look, they've got a cool offering coming up called Sports Agent School, which is for those folks who are interested in being a sports agent. They're really putting together a lot of cool programs to help people break into the business of basketball, and it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like I said, the piece is awesome. There's a lot of good insight there. I look forward to attending, hopefully, one of those conferences in the near future. And the piece will be linked below in the post. Hey, besides that, Keith, do you have anything else that you want to plug, get out there for everyone to go check out?
So coming up for Real GM, I'm going to be doing, hopefully it'll run in a couple days here, an Olympics preview, but more with an NBA lens. So you're looking at guys who maybe coming to the NBA from, we're not going to cover Team USA. If you're listening to this and you don't know all the Team USA guys, then we'll have a separate conversation later. But I think it's one of those things where you got to know, you know, some of these other guys from these other countries. So I think that'll be, you know, a lot of fun for people to read, especially as you're sitting down. And if you want to watch Australia and France play and you want to learn a little bit about guys who aren't, you know, your normal NBA names, you know, what can you do? So that'll be running soon here before the Olympics get cranked up this coming weekend. And then after that, I'm going to transition to doing some divisional recaps of what went on in the off season. But instead of your typical, this is who came in and this is who went out and this is how it'll impact, I'm more looking for what are things going to be like down the line? What did this do to your cap space? What did this do to your, you know, future flexibility, future draft pick situation, those kind of things. So that's going to be the focus on that. And those will run throughout the remainder of the summer here as we're kind of hitting the dog days of the NBA calendar.
Yeah, everyone always talks about July, but it's really August that struggles. August is definitely the slowest month as far as preseason goes.
Absolutely.
Because at least in September you have training camps and you have some of the preseason, or at least the build-up to preseason. August, there's nothing. And, you know, this year we have some Olympic talk, and you talked about it. Go check it out for Lithuania and Spain, who has Domantas Sabonis and Alex Abrines. That's all I can think of off the top of my head, but there are those two Thunder players at least you can check out, because I haven't seen much of either of them play, and I'll definitely be checking out all that stuff from Keith. You can follow Keith at Keith Smith NBA. Read his stuff over at Real GM, Today's Fast Break. You can follow me at Sean_Woods15. Like I said earlier, go leave a 5-star rating, leave a review for me. Thanks to everybody who's listening. Thanks to David Ayer and everybody else who sent in Twitter questions that we were not able to get to today. This podcast ran a little longer than normal, but we haven't had one in a couple of weeks, so we thought we would treat you guys well. Hey, Keith, I really appreciate you joining me this week. Like I said, we'll make sure everyone gets to follow you. Go follow him on Twitter. Keith, I'll have to have you back on as soon as possible, all right?
Thanks, Sean. It was fantastic. Always great to talk about the Cap and the league as a whole, and I'm happy to come back anytime you want to have me.
Yes, sir. It was a good time.
Thank you.
We don't do the same drugs no more. We don't do the same drugs no more. Cause she don't do the same drugs no more. We don't do the same drugs no more. When did you change? When do you've aged? I thought you never grow up. I thought you never. Window closed. Wendy got old. I was too late. A shadow of what I once was. Cause we don't the same drugs no more. We don't do the same drugs no more. She don't laugh the same way no more. We don't do the same drugs no more. Where did you go? Why would you stay? You must have lost your marbles. You always were so forgetful. In a hurry. Don't wait up. I was too late. A shadow of what I once was. Cause we don't do what we say we're gonna. You were always perfect. And I was only practice. Don't you miss the day. Stranger, don't you miss the days? Don't you miss the danger? We don't do the same drugs no more. Forget the happy thoughts. All you need is happy thoughts. The past tense, past bedtime. Way back then when everything we read was real and everything we said rhymed. Wide-eyed kids being kids. Why did you stop? What did you do to your hair? Where did you go to end up? Right back here. When did you start to forget how to fly? Don't you call out, don't you bleed. Stay in the line. We don't do the same. Don't you call out, don't you bleed. Stay in the line. We don't do the same.
Thank you.